Sorry for the slight delay in getting going here. Appreciate your patience. Actually, I could go by the clock on the back, and you can realize I'm actually 20 minutes early. But nevertheless, calling the meeting to order, and let's all rise and join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. It appears that all five members of the board are present and in good humor. That's a good way to start the meeting. And we're fortunate to have the rain outside. It's interesting that it started just before the meeting, which might have caused a slight inconvenience getting from your car to the vet's hall, but nevertheless, a blessing. Mr. Carmel, do we have any reports from closed session?
Yes, President Farmer. The board discussed or provided direction to its labor negotiators, which resulted in item 4A today. You briefly discussed the general manager's performance, and we briefly discussed anticipated litigation, but there's no formal report.
Thank you. Do we have any agenda reviews?
I'm sorry, President Farmer.
Yes.
I forgot. I wasn't there, but on the 9th, I believe, the board also discussed the general manager's performance at length.
Right. Yeah, I seem to recall after we had the brief public meeting, the closed session job evaluation of the general manager lasted probably close to 3 hours, if I'm not mistaken. I think everybody's in agreement with that. Which tells you we talked about a lot, I guess, right? So once again, any agenda reviews, additions, deletions? Yes, Director Rice.
I just wanted to, for future agendas, note that we really don't take just 15 minutes per item. And it's if you allow 15 minutes per item, that doesn't include the amount of public comment that might be included for an item. And reducing the amount based on staff report and questions to staff reports. Each director has less than 2 minutes, essentially, if we're going to get it done within 15. So maybe paying attention to how many items are on the agenda and not just automatically assuming they'll all be 15 minutes, because I'm concerned at how many items of substantial concern to the community are on today's agenda. I don't necessarily want to change it right now. I just wanted to make that note for future time planning purposes.
It does appear this has kind of been a time-worn tradition that it always says 15 minutes, and I guess we all assume, well, that it just happens to say that, but we know that usually isn't the way it works out. So for those of you that are here for the first time, just know that sometimes we have less, sometimes we have more than 15 minutes to discuss an item. So moving on to item 2A, I'm looking to see, is there anyone? There he is, Steve Arino. Wow. Mr. Steve Niffen from the PROS Commission. And Steve, how
good
are
afternoon.
You, buddy?
I'm doing great, thank you. So I was going to tell a story, but then you said, oh, we're running long, but I'm going to tell the story anyway.
Tell it.
Because we're all in good humor, but we're all at the chamber meeting the thing on Tuesday night, and I just want to convey a little small town how it can hinder you at sometimes. I go up to John, and I think, oh, I'm going to, you know, kind of have a normal conversation with John, which I might not normally with the rest of you who I know, because I might spew anything at any time, because I'm comfortable with you. But I go up to John, and I think, oh, I'm going to try to have a normal conversation for a second. I say to him at one point, oh, are you still teaching at Harvard? Is it Harvard or Yale or wherever? And he says, well, I'm done for now, but, you know. And I say to him, well, do you have to do that again? Thinking to myself, somehow he's teaching at Harvard and he's laboring there like trying to pick up extra money. And politely he says to me, well, no, you kind of want to teach at Harvard. And I thought, oh my God, with my foot in my mouth. And I wanted to apologize for that and congratulate you. And hopefully everything is going well. But you could have, if you couldn't, most people think, oh, Steve never turns red. I was bright red with that comment. And then I just ran to Harry and started talking about baseball and was much more comfortable. But it was nice to see most of you at that function, and I enjoyed myself, and I think that's a good interaction spot for a lot of people to be. So thank you for that, and I'm sorry. And other than that, I was just, you know, most of the stuff that we're doing at the Pros right now is stuff that we've done before. The skate park, I can answer questions about that if you have specific questions. We approved our goals. They're basically the same goals that we've had in the past. We changed the wording on a couple of little things, but then we added a new goal, number 5, which is secure or obtain some funding outside of the normal CCSD funding mechanisms, because that was kind of in vain with the trying to start some type of foundation that umbrellas more of the other stuff. So other than that, we welcomed the new FFRP executive director, Holly. There you go. Any questions? I guess basically that's about it. Oh, working on getting a the bathrooms, working on getting some money from the County Tourism Board on an infrastructure grant that might help us do some planning. Most grants are more for the project, and we struggle with getting the planning going, getting the funding for the planning. So we found a couple of ways maybe to work on some funding for planning, which would help with both the skate park and with the bathrooms over on the East Ranch. There you go.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Any questions? Yes, Vice President Steidel.
So, Steve, I was curious, your reference to the outside funding, potential for the outside funding, were you just saying then it has to do with some of the planning needs that you have rather than the idea that it's just kind of it's not a good fit in terms of what you're trying to accomplish for revenue stream?
That might be beyond me. What I think we were saying is normally we just kind of think we'll wait for the funding to come from the CCSD, right? And we wouldn't necessarily ask for grants ourselves because that was beyond our scope. But now we're starting with the idea of starting the outside foundation. And
right.
Part of the conversation was that the Pros might be a good starting spot for the foundation to begin. I tried to push it off because I didn't necessarily want that. But if the community thinks that may be the good spot for the initiation, then that's, I'm not, you
I was
know.
Just, I was just trying to make sure I understood that the intent of going forward on that was still something that you were going to be doing with the Pros.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. Yes. Director Pearson.
Do you have any idea how much money you need to do the planning for those two items? Have you gotten?
I'm going to say $20,000 a piece.
$20,000 a piece?
Well, maybe not. So, and I'm really just talking off the top of my. Yeah, we're thinking $20,000 for the bathrooms because it's going to take a set of plans. And we had the conversation of whether to buy a new one. Carlos got us the plans for the bathroom behind Center Street and said, there they are. They're like a full set of plans. But when you look at that set of plans, it's no good anymore. You're going to have to re-engineer. And most people, when you look at it, they're like, you're better off buying a kit bathroom that's all ADA compliant because they're upping their stuff every single year, blah, 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 and go down that road. And so, yeah, it might not be 20, but it's going to be more than 10. Yeah.
Okay, good. I think we really should try to get them the money next year, regardless of whether their grant goes, because they've been waiting to do both of these projects for a long time, and we need to come up with our money.
And the skate park is more of a permitting thing. Once we got, we think, that we got the permit through the county, then you don't really need necessarily, I don't think, an architect to design the skate park. You can buy that. That'll be a cost, but it won't be, you know, nearly what the bathroom is going to be.
Yeah, we need to give you the funding.
Yeah, that's up to you guys. Right on.
Director Rice.
First, thank you for the anecdote. Yeah. It was very entertaining. Yeah. Appreciate it. Always is from you. Second, on the, I do agree with Director Pearson. It would be good if we can help you with the planning so that we can get things put together. But I'm glad to hear you're also looking for outside grant funding. Being able to have a plan that's ready to go will be helpful in the grant funding. Let's just make sure PROS has a copy of the grants policy and the way the approval process works for the district so that everything's all up.
Yes, Director Howell.
Thank you. Thank you. On an entirely different subject, could you make a few remarks regarding the relationship between PROS and the group which wants to put the swimming pool out in Shamwell Park? I'm seeing a lot of discussion about that and a lack of clarity as to PROS' involvement in that.
I'm going to say, I guess, from a legal point of view, I would say that we don't really have any relationship to them other than we're supportive of people doing things in Cambria. And so we want to help them get answers, and so we've supported some of the stuff that they've been behind. But it's more that the first thing we did was informational. We want everybody to have information about things to do and recreation, so we're trying to be supportive in that regard. I don't want to run from it, but we don't have a representative at their meetings. They don't we don't have an ad hoc member from their group like we do FFRP. We have a relationship with FFRP, but not necessarily the pool people. I'm not necessarily opposed to it if that came to that, you know. But there's a lot of discussion about location. I get that, yeah. We have not advocated anything from that regard.
Steve, if I could just ask you, for folks that might be watching now or might be watching in the future, when do you anticipate that this particular item regarding the swimming pool is going to be addressed at a PROS meeting so perhaps people that are interested could attend from one side or the other?
When are you asking me when I think it will come back to us?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't even see it on the radar right now this year. I don't think there's even a question that's posed to us. I think they would have to get a substantial amount of money to move on to the next stage before that became, you know. I do know County Parks is supportive of the idea at Shamwell Park. You know, there's people on board. It is a legitimate project, and there you go.
So just out of curiosity, could people come to your meeting and during public comment address this issue?
Yeah.
I mean, they could hear as well, but
yeah,
since you're the PROS Commission.
Always. We would be happy to hear anybody's public comment. We have public comment at the beginning of the meeting, and you can come and make your comment and then go. You don't have to sit through the rest of the meeting. I don't want people to feel like that. I mean, you can come and say your piece, and we'll take it down and consider it, and, you know, yeah.
All right.
And when the pool people are on the agenda, well, that's, you know, we don't make an announcement, but it is on the agenda as us taking a report from them.
All right, Steve, thanks very much. Have a good rest of the week, okay?
Right on, you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy. All righty. Moving forward to public comment, I just want to let folks know that we have a number of comment slips here, but they're mostly on agenda items. But we do have two request to speak at this moment, and the first would be Christine Heinrich.
Hello, thank you. I just wanted to welcome Ray D'Enzo to Cambria, our new utilities manager. I was at a meeting that he attended, and he spoke very, very eloquently. In addition to his responsibilities here in Cambria, he teaches in the construction technology department at Cuesta College. So the point was made that he's not only an experienced public speaker who's accustomed to explaining complicated things to the public, but he also, that puts him in a position to be a pipeline for new employees for Cambria who are freshly trained in the latest technology. So that's really exciting. Ray is a lifelong County resident. He currently lives in Atascadero, but he and his wife were married here in Shamwell Park 22 years ago. So he's really committed to Cambria, and we're delighted to have him. He said, "I consider Cambria the jewel of the Central Coast." So I just wanted to make sure that he's welcomed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just walking Leffingwell the other day noticed some very interesting white rock, and a geologist friend of mine confirmed my identification of it as asbestos. So when you say the jewel of the Central Coast, the complexities of the definition are multiple. I want to thank Director Rice for raising the 15-minute issue. It's been hilarious for decades, and I confirm the need to define it a little more realistically. I thank Mr. Kniffen for mentioning that our general manager has taught at Harvard. I did that myself for a few years as visiting faculty, and it was very institutionally instructive. But that's not the reason I actually asked to come to speak to you right now. I visit Santa Rosa Creek a lot, as you well know, from the photos I post. I'm trying to follow the standard of Elizabeth Haug and Mark Ray in photography, and I aspire to do half as well as they do on Facebook postings. But I visit several times a week now for various reasons, which I won't go into. And I notice unusual developments in the creek and the lagoon. I sent you, dear directors, today, and the general manager, a request from me. It's 14 pages long, mostly photographs. But I want an explanation from CCSD of what happened in Santa Rosa Creek from early October until the 26th of November. The need is great for in-stream flow studies, as you well know. But we need studies pertaining to the environmental damage done by the amount of water CCSD withdraws from the creek, even though it's for the service of great human beings as a species and our needs. We need studies done to determine to what chemicals are put into the creek in the treatment of the withdrawn water. And my ignorance here is 110% perfect. But I've asked for a tour of the wells on Santa Rosa Creek and have not yet received a response in some months. We also need the studies to determine the management plan for the withdrawal from San Simeon and Santa Rosa Creeks. Now, earlier this month, someone brought to my attention, and I peer at your website like you wouldn't believe with stunning regularity. I didn't see this. But somebody brought to my attention that there is a document posted there on the 30th of December, and the document is described this way. The Cambria Community Services District is requesting statements of qualifications and proposals from qualified consultants for the following services. One, to develop the district's 2020 urban water management plan, to assist the district in obtaining a coastal development permit for the advanced water treatment plant and related facilities described in the SEIR, etc. I read that document at least three times carefully. And I assure you that the law requires in-stream flow studies that are not provided for in that document. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. And I believe our general manager wished to make a comment on this before we move forward. Sorry about that. Hank, just a moment. Perhaps I... I have one here that you wanted to comment on wastewater.
I have one on public comments and one on 5D.
So you have one on 5D and then this one on wastewater. Okay, my apologies, Hank.
From last month, I wanted to provide a continuing kind of dialogue here and input as a resident of San Simeon. And first off, I wanted to thank Amanda had directed me to John and staff for some assistance, and they were gracious enough, Monique and Pam, to provide some time this week with me to answer a couple questions on the financial side, so I thank you for taking that time. The one page that I wanted to talk about now in the public comment area was the general wastewater alternatives. And the first one, I mean, there's three basic alternatives. One is to have Cambria process San Simeon wastewater. That's the one that is of most interest, I think, in this joint effort. If not, if that is a no-go decision, then San Simeon could proceed to build a new wastewater treatment plant, which I don't think will be as cost-effective as the first or as environmentally friendly as the first, particularly with the delays that will be incurred. And thirdly, there could be an ultimate grand new solution that would be nice with newer technology and potentially wetlands that I hear about all the time and so on. But focusing on item one just real quickly, there are some benefits. I mean, our wastewater treatment plant is at risk for our community, and I would like to see us also stop effluent flow into the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary as soon as possible. There's some comments that I put here that are significant. This alternative could be implemented in three to five years if people really want it to happen. It doesn't take that long to put in a 3.5 mile long stretch of pipeline and a pump station. And secondly, is that I think it'll be the lowest cost alternative. I've done some preliminary numbers that I'll present in the next few weeks to you all, estimates of the cost of the pipeline, the cost of the pump stations, and so on. And I've talked to an engineering company to back those numbers up as well as your staff to make sure that people are generally in sync with some of these numbers. The alternative, and this is something I try to do, and again, this is my estimate, and it wouldn't be fair to say that this is validated by Cambria staff. I just took Cambria staff through these numbers, but it looks like there's a potential of $400,000 a year of revenue by processing our wastewater, which would pay for about $8 million worth of the wastewater treatment upgrades that you're looking at. The biggest challenge, I think, and there is additional water that you would have to process, but the biggest challenge, I think, for San Simeon will be ultimately if you take over our wastewater, it's going to be an issue of control, governance, and changes to financial and operational arrangements for the remaining services. That's basically over half of our budget, basically. And so that, I think, is going to be the big issue, and I'm concerned about that from a delay standpoint, but it's real. Thank you.
Thank you, Hank. Moving on now to the consent agenda. And General Manager Weigel, I believe you wanted to make a comment on this item. No? Okay. So, excuse me. So should we have a discussion here on this particular item before we vote on it, or just go ahead and make a motion to approve?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda as
all right.
Exists.
Okay, do we have a second?
I have a few questions.
All right. Yes, Director Rice.
I just would like to, for purposes, because this negotiation process goes on as part of closed session so that we don't have a disadvantage because we've tipped our hand in a public meeting to the union as to what we're willing to do. So that's why we do it in closed session. But I think it's because it's a five-year contract or an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, I think it's important for the community to know that this is going to be going into effect as soon as we approve it. I did have some very specific questions related to that I did get answered related to longevity pay and prior salary schedules so we could see the difference. And then calculating out for the 5 years what it would mean for us. And the general, I sent these concerns to the general manager. He responded to me. One of the things that I was reading is that one of the things that we did in this negotiation was we separated the office and the operations and maintenance employees into two groups, and the two groups will be getting different increases because operations and operations and maintenance, if you look statewide for those positions, had been near the bottom of this of the pay scale generally for those positions across the state, whereas the office wasn't so out of whack as to be near the bottom of the list salary-wise. So that's one of the reasons why maintenance and operations is getting a bigger raise, is to try and bring them more in line with what the office staff is being paid and the benefits that they get. One of the things I noticed, and I didn't remember us discussing, was the issue of admin leave. And it only applies for the office staff and not for the operations and maintenance group. So, and that I had, that was one of the questions I had, is if it applied to the operations and maintenance, and it doesn't. It's only for the office group. But everybody gets training days. That's a paid day. It's not like a vacation day you have to take or anything like that. The district supports that. So on the salary schedule, for anybody that's watching later or looking at the agenda packet, on the salary schedule there's three columns that talk about longevity pay. For employees that that were hired before 2012, there's a longevity pay. If you've been here 10 years, you get a little bit of a bump up over somebody that's not been here that long. And there was nothing listed in the exempt employees, and I asked the question why that was, and apparently that pay differential doesn't apply to the exempt employees. Other than that, it was just about having all 5 years of the pay scale, but really that's just for my convenience, because I could calculate it out over the years, and so I don't really have any objections. I'm a little concerned about the two groups having, some have 2 days of admin leave and some don't, but other than, I don't want to hang the contract up on that one term. And so that pretty much covers all of the concerns that I had going into this contract, and the union's already agreed to this. In fact, we have a signed document today, and like I said, I don't necessarily want to hold up the entire, we've been negotiating for a couple months now, and we're out of contract from the prior contract. So again, I don't want to delay, but I did want to express those things so the community has more of the backing information than they would otherwise have.
Thank you for informing the ratepayers of the community about this item. Director Howell, did you wish to make a comment?
No, but I would like to go ahead and move acceptance of this item.
I do have one item, and it's probably just a typo item. There's a reference to Exhibit E, and within the narrative of where that exhibit applies, it is referenced as exhibit or attachment exhibit A rather than E, if I'm correct. And it's not a, I don't know that it's an issue of any kind. It's just, it's in the resolution.
Mr. Carmel, did you wish to remark on this at all?
I'm not really following you. There's a reference to Exhibit E.
Exhibit.
On what page?
Unfortunately, the reference document that I had for myself got left in the car. I ran for the rain.
The resolution?
Let me take a look. There are exhibits that there are attachments A, B, C, D, and E.
Appendices.
Thank you. And the appendix E in the narrative area refers to it as Appendix A.
So out of curiosity, is everybody out there, you still have your appendix, or have you was taken out at a younger age? I'm just curious. So seeing all these smiles, no response, we'll move on back to this item.
We just want to make sure we get it right.
A five-year MOU, we want to make sure we get the language all correct. So
right. So the actual appendix E is on page 28, and the narrative related to it is page 26, item 2, and it refers to the employee grievance form, and it says attached here too as exhibit A, and it is an actuality exhibit E, if I'm reading that correctly.
Exhibit A is the salary schedule.
So page 26, item 2 under complaint process, item 2 refers to the employee grievance form as exhibit A.
Oh, I see.
And when you look at the exhibits, the form itself is appendix E. So I don't know if exhibit and appendix are the same thing, number one.
They're not.
Okay. So I'm not sure where exhibit A is, since it says that it's attached.
So just for clarification, Vice President Steidel, your concern is?
Well, they're in both cases, it's referred to as an employee grievance form. And in one case on page 26, it's referred to as attached hereto as exhibit A. 26. But the form itself is appendix E on page 40. And I don't know if the references on appendix and exhibit are the same, which Mr. Carmel has just said that they aren't. But they carry the same title, employee grievance form. And on page 26, it's referred to as an attachment of exhibit A. And I had not seen an attachment exhibit A, only the appendices.
So I think the confusion. Monique has a good answer for you.
I think the confusion comes in, and Appendix D is actually resolution 2496, which I'm sure if I checked resolution 2496, the exhibit to that resolution is A, the grievance form. This reference to Appendix E is in the MOU, which the MOU itself is referring to the Appendix E as the grievance form. So it's because there's two separate documents, and the document that is referencing Exhibit A is a resolution, which has been included in the MOU.
Okay. I understand the explanation. It's just that... okay. I don't know that there's any way to resolve what's just been explained. So... we just have two different references with the form, the same form, being called out.
If it's a clerical mistake, we can just correct it after the action.
That's fine. If that's the case, then that makes it a moot point, and we should move forward.
Agreed. Thank you, Ms. Madrid and Mr. Carmel. So we'll go back to Director Pearson. Did you wish to make a motion to approve this item?
Yeah, I think I already did. I make a motion to approve this item and the consent agenda.
And right. I'll second that motion.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. So could we have a roll call, please, Ms. Madrid?
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Stidell?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Yeah, I'm fine, but, you know, my gallbladder's acting up now after all that, but we'll just move on. That was a joke also.
Didn't you get your gallbladder removed?
Well, appendix, gallbladder.
Oh.
Now we're moving on to item 5A, the discussion on the issuance of intent to serve letters and position transfers. And we do have some requests to speak on this item. So I believe, let me just ask the former president, should I move right now to the comments on this and then have Ms. General Manager Weigold, would you introduce this item, please?
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 5A is discussion of the issuance of intent to serve letters and position transfers. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors discuss the issuance of intent to serve letters and transfer of positions, including water meters and waste positions, waitlist positions, and our utilities staff has a presentation to make as part of this discussion and is standing by.
All right. So I believe before we have your presentation, Melissa, perhaps we could have the public comment and then you could answer any questions that might be posed or any concerns. So we have three requests to speak on this item, and the first one is my client's.
Thank you very much, Mike Lyons, Cambria. And continuing on in the lighthearted vein in which everyone has contributed today, I'm delighted to see that the discussion on this includes the word clarity regarding past and present practices in this matter. So I'd like to admit, and that part of a confession, that I've always been confused between the word, that phrase intent to serve letter, which you kindly seem to have typed out for us on page 2, and will serve letter on the next page. So I know that in our presence we have one board member who's an expert in the English language. I'm looking at her now. And behind me I have another expert in the English language. I think we should come up with a rationalization, some way that doesn't confuse me and many others that I've spoken to about this, and find a way to separate those phrases so that they mean something distinct. I hope you can do that. Thanks.
Thank you. I believe Ms. Bland will probably discuss that item. Next person to speak is Christine Heinrich.
Thank you. Several recent building permits granted by the county on the strength of Cambria's staff recommendation were recommended for denial by the Coastal Commission. The Commission's staff reports ran to more than 30 pages each. The Commission raised multiple issues to recommend denial, including violation of the district's own ordinances and the local coastal plan. They focused on the damage already being done by pumping water out of San Simeon and Santa Rosa Creeks. The staff reports made the point that, quote, there is not an adequate, sustainable water supply to provide new water service to serve new development in Cambria, and it is not adequate even for existing development. The paperwork that came to the county for approval was processed by Cambria CSD staff. Assigning the responsibility for approving these applications to a staff member whose work is below the public horizon and thus allowing them to move forward conceals them from the board and the public. I ask the board to instruct staff to stop processing these permit applications. Considering Cambria's water shortage and the damage already being done to the creeks and Cambria's environment and the Coastal Commission's notice of that, no permits should be issued at all. The points noted in the Cambria staff report regarding exceptions to the moratorium are irrelevant. As the Coastal Commission said in Swift, to be clear, the LCP does not allow or condone any type of water meter exchange in order to allow for new water connections in a manner which could be deemed LCP consistent, which is assures adequacy of water and wastewater services. In that case, the Swift project was also particularly problematic because the water meter transfer that was completed did not lead to an actual reduction in water use and will lead to an increase in the overall number of water connections in Cambria. In Hadean, it said, the cumulative effect of the moratorium and the certified LCP is that currently the LCP effectively prohibits approval of new water service in Cambria, taking into account the actual facts and reality on the ground. The Coastal Commission has been clear repeatedly in its decisions that adding water users under any guise is not allowed. If the board chooses to defy the Coastal Commission and good environmental stewardship, it should do so in public, considering each application and all directors going on the record as voting about them. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Mr. Ryan Bersma.
Good afternoon. Ryan Bersma, vacant Cambria landowner in Tract 1804, CCSD ratepayer and environmentalist. I would like to respectfully remind the board of the district's legal and contractual obligation to provide water and in some cases sewer to the remaining 8 undeveloped lots in Tract 1804 per the Lemert Settlement Agreement dated July 12, 1999 and effective August 11, 1999. Section B6 of the agreement states, quote, the obligations of the district under this agreement are contractual in nature. The district may not restrict, modify, or otherwise amend its contractual obligations to Cambria West, who was the original developer of Tract 1804 at that time, as provided in this agreement and or in the 1985 contract by adopting, repealing, or otherwise modifying its ordinances, resolutions, or regulations. After connection, which has already occurred nearly 20 years ago, the 18 lots within Tract 1804 will be treated in the same manner as other existing residential customers of the district. While the 8 remaining undeveloped lots in Tract 1804 have active service water meters in the ground and can, and in at least my case, do use water when no outdoor water restrictions are in place, the county still requires an intent to serve letter as part of the building application. So unless the district is going to revoke water and sewer rights to all residents within Cambria, they are contractually obligated to provide intent to serve letters to the 8 remaining landowners in Tract 1804, regardless of whether another entity may or may not appeal such building application. As stated in the 2018 Coastal Commission approved North Coast Area Plan and LCP, Chapter 7-29, Paragraph 4A, as an existing connection or water service commitment before November 12, 2001, Tract 1804 is exempt from assuring impacts to Santa Rosa or San Simeon Creeks. My family and I have always cared for the environment, but also have the same legal right to live here and use CCSD services, which are provided to us, just like they are provided to you. Regardless of potential appeals by outside entities, the CCSD must still uphold its legal obligations per the Lemert Settlement Agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bersman. If you don't mind, just a moment. I think the board and staff would appreciate if you could somehow maybe email us or print out and provide that document for us to have, you know, that you just read.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. All right, moving forward. With discussion of this item, Ms. Bland, did you wish to speak at the microphone?
Yes, sir, I submitted a request to speak.
My apologies. Yes, you did, Ms. Bettenhausen. Sorry about that. I've got to get my alphabet straight, obviously.
I just gave a wonderful book to a first grade class yesterday about the alphabet written in poetry. It's a wonderful, so maybe I'll get another copy, Mr. President, and hand it over. That's a joke.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
I have neither gallbladder nor appendix, so I'm in a position to joke about that, too. I would like first to refer to 30 years of climate change. I don't have to elaborate because you know all about it. And unfortunately, the promises we make in the past are no longer meetable. We've got a mess. We've got a mess called planet Earth, and we need to deal with that when we look at specification of how we deal with the so-called natural resources in the area. I call them rather creeks and environments. In 2001, the interim general manager, Vern Hamilton, I remember hearing him the next year. I thought he was an excellent general manager. But he brought to the attention of the board clarification on procedures after they adopted the Water 305 in November of that year. But I point out to you that since that time, the intent to serve letters have been on hold. They aren't off the hold, they're on hold. So clarifying intent to serve and will serve also addresses a procedural confusion that has been with the CCSD for at least two decades. Now, I want to point out to you what it says in the land use plan, because you are obligated, so far as I can tell, to pay attention to the limitations of development regarding water service in Cambria. Until such, quote, until such time as may be otherwise authorized through a coastal development permit, approving a major public works project involving new potable water resources, new development not using CCSD connections, or water service connections commitments existing as of 2001, shall assure no adverse, you have to assure that there is no adverse impact on the creeks. Now, you can go back and read all the details of that. It's 285 pages or so, and it's fascinating reading. But I draw your attention also then, as Ms. Heinrichs has, to what the Coastal Commission has said, and it's very clear. Number one, the county did not, Slo County, did not determine that there was a, quote, and I emphasize this, an adequate, sustainable water supply to serve the development project. Friends, please, as the board of directors of this district, look at that phrase. An adequate, sustainable water supply. That is prerequisite to doing anything about 5A. You can put 5A on the table and let it sit there because we don't have enough water. And we promised it, but there isn't enough anymore. We were wrong, we humans. We erred in our evaluation of how much water we can take from Earth without damaging the whole planet. Please, directors, pay explicit attention to that. I've asked you again and again for a discussion of climate change and its effects on the district. I have not yet heard it, but I look forward to it because I'm sure that you are quite willing and able to discuss that with implications for the policy decisions and procedural activities that you engage, including what in the world is the mess with conservation programs and intent to serve. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more requests to speak on this item, we're now open for discussion. Ms. Bland.
Thank you. Hello, President Farmer, members of the board. I am here today to discuss the very interesting issue of intent to serve letters, will serve letters, and position transfers. Let me see if I can make this work. Where am I? There we go. Okay. So, general manager taught me a little trick to do the bottom line up front, and then I'm going to admit that I'm lifting some of this language from my new supervisor, Mr. D'Enzo. But bottom line up front, staff functions in the realm of operations, and operational parameters are determined by board policy. So essentially, if there is an issue with the work that your staff is doing, then it is the prerogative of the board to change the policy that guides that work. You don't want members of your staff coming up with policy on their own, no matter how well-intentioned their, you know, beliefs and personal insights might be. So with that said, current... Which direction do I point? Back of the room. Thank you. Whoop. Over my shoulder. Yeah, that's what I'm hitting. Can you just move two slides forward? Thank you. Okay, intent to serve letters. So intent to serve letters are governed by Title 8, Chapter 4, Section 80. Under that, it authorizes the general manager to execute intent to serve letters for any project that is 3 EDUs or below. Because the intent to serve letters, for the most part, are under a suspension and have not, you know, no new intent to serve letters have been issued except for under those very few exceptions. The only processing of intent to serve letters that has happened has been extensions of existing letters. So these are all pre-moratorium that have just continued to be extended for several decades. So anything 3 EDUs or below has gone through staff and then been executed by the general manager. Anything 3.1 EDUs and above has come before the board for extension. Next slide. Remodels, additions, reconstruction, and change of use. These are projects that are not subject to EDU allocation because they already have existing EDUs assigned to them. They do not require an intent to serve letter because they are already connected to the system.
Excuse me, Ms. Bland. Mm-hmm. I just want to interrupt. For clarification, an EDU is?
An equivalent dwelling unit. You could quiz me on that. It's a hard thing to explain, but our code does outline the equivalent dwelling unit is essentially taking the summertime usage, an average single-family residential home, and then applying that so that we can come up with allocations for commercial uses. So one EDU is what every single-family home is assigned, and then commercial uses are broken down from that, based off of that summertime usage, which I think was actually determined in 1996.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So,
President Farmer,
excuse me, Director Rice.
It equals about the amount the average single-family residence uses in a year is what an EDU is. So, the amount of water a house uses in a year, then they translate that over to commercial. How many houses per year worth of water is required for a project? So, all single-family is one EDU.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially, but it's the amount of water used for a year for that, for a residence.
Well, thank you for that clarification.
So these projects do not have to have an intent to serve letter. These have what we call a will serve letter. As an English major myself, the only thing I could point out is that an intent to serve is not a guarantee. It is not a promise. It is an intention. And a will serve is actually saying we will, without, you know, reservation, serve this project. Will serves are issued as sort of a means to apply conditions such as compliance with the retrofit and points bank sections of our code. So under that, we apply impact fees for any water fixtures that are added. This comes after a plan review where we physically count and label all of the water fixtures in before plans and then after plans, and then invoice according to each individual fixture that is added. And then those impact fees stay within the water budget, and they fund conservation programs or any other expenditures approved by the board. Next slide. Transfer of positions. So this is governed under Title H, Chapter 4, Section 100B and F. Those are for single family and commercial positions only. There is language within the code that does allow for the transfer of irrigation meters, but it does not specifically, to my knowledge, authorize the general manager to execute those. A position can mean an active service commitment, which means you are actively using water from the district. A non-active service commitment, which means you are paying minimum billing for water service, but there is no actual water flowing through your meter to any structure. Parks landscape irrigation commitment, which does not have an EDU associated with it. Waitlist positions, valid intent to serve letters, or valid connection permits. The transfers are a pretty routine administrative task where we receive the application, verify that all of the code requirements are being met. We forward that information to legal counsel. They put together a transfer agreement and a restrictive covenant, and then that document, the transfer agreement, is executed by the general manager. So if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to address those.
Director Rice.
When you say on the transfer of positions, let me get to it because there was specific. Is the restrictive covenant related to what we call retiring the lot that the service was coming from?
Yes.
Is that what the restrictive covenant
yes.
is?
The code for the transfer, the process for transfers is pretty extensive, so trying to summarize it into a small paragraph was quite the task. But yes, the restrictive covenant applies to the parcel that the buyer or seller is willing to retire. It can be the parcel that is sending the position, but it can also be an alternate as long as it meets certain criteria.
And yeah, I know that that part of the code is complex. Can an active meter be moved to a property that has an active waitlist position?
No, transfers actually, there is a section in the code that prohibits a transfer from placing more than one position on a parcel.
Okay. Thank you for those clarifications.
Mm-hmm. Any other board discussion? Excuse me, yes, Vice President Steidel.
I just wanted to highlight also that on the will serves, it isn't just a matter of the will serve being offered. It also has to do with the fire plan review that goes on that's provided by the district's fire chief. And those two in tandem are what allows someone who is doing a retrofit on their home to be able to then go to the county to progress with the planning process.
Correct. Both of those reviews have been funneled through the one application process because they're so tightly connected, especially in terms of the fire sprinkler plan review and having to upgrade water service for that.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Director Pearson.
At one point in time, you gave me a list of the properties that currently have meters in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, active meters, as the man said, the Lamert area has some of those.
Mm-hmm.
And other active meters that basically qualify as the same thing as my meter at my house.
Right.
Okay. And you also gave me a list of those that were also grandfathered or whatever in. Could you provide the full board with those by the first February meeting or something, and maybe even run it by council to make sure that we're in accordance with all of the settlements that we've signed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that we as the board know what we've quote unquote committed to in the distant past. So that if at some point we decide we want to change the code that currently exists, that then we have a basis for, okay, why are we changing it and what would it impact at that time? Okay?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Director Rice.
Under discussion, and I don't know if these are questions you can answer, or we just need to be looking at how we need to be addressing this issue, because I think that the board needs to focus on just as she said and Ms. Bland said at the very beginning, it's important if the staff isn't doing the procedures that as we would like to have them done, that we need to take a look at what the policies are that they're following. And as long as they're following what's in current policy, then right now they're doing it right. And if we want them to change, we need to update the policy. So that said, it says under number 2, under remodels, additions, reconstruction, I'm looking on page 46 of the agenda packet, these projects cannot exceed their existing allocated equivalent dwelling units. How does that determine? I mean, I thought if it's a single family residence remodel, it can't exceed the
right
allocation,
so
right?
That typically applies to change of use, which is commercial.
So of changing from residential to commercial or something?
No, that would mean, so changing from, say, there was a retail business in the unit and then they moved out and someone came in that wanted to have a restaurant or a beer garden or whatever the case may be, we have to, and that the code does give the general manager the authority to determine that EDU allocation to see if it fits in with those parameters. And in the past, that has been the district engineer's job to kind of do a comparison. If there's not an easy, if it doesn't fit within the existing table of EDUs, then in the past we've literally called local agencies and asked for comparative data on similar businesses. One example was I can't remember if it was 927 Brewing, but there was a microbrewery that wanted to come in, and they were proposing being able to use a lot of technology that would recycle water and kind of reduce the typical consumption of a brewery. So he had to physically take all of those calculations and do a validation to make sure that it fit within the EDUs that they were trying to operate within.
Okay, and is there any remedy for somebody who, say, wants to take a retail business and create like a coffee bar or something that would require maybe more water use than the retail shop?
The only remedy would be transferring commercial EDUs from a different parcel.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there any other way other than buying a parcel that has commercial EDUs?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
And we have had to deny projects in the past or tell them that they couldn't use that, you know, specific parcel because of the EDU allocation existing.
Okay. I may be the most senior board member, but back in the recesses before I was on the board, I remember people could buy commercial EDUs. Because I wasn't on the board and wasn't involved in any of those processes, I don't know what was all involved in all of that, but it's just something I know back in the recesses of my mind prior to being on the board was something people could buy commercial EDUs for a certain amount per. That may have been deleted by a board action, but I just honestly don't know. It's just something that's sitting there, been nagging at my brain.
There is a commercial market for EDUs. Commercial properties can, you know, buy and sell those, but they have to be able to transfer them according to our code. So we don't have anything to do. I've gotten questions about how much it costs to buy an EDU, and the answer is I don't know.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's helpful clarification for me. One other question is on the plan reviews. Do you guys, just from being on NCAC and knowing how much plans change from the first time you see them to the time that stuff is built, do we do an on-site inspection to make sure that the fixtures are and that the fire codes have been met?
Yes. Every time there is a remodel that changes or even just replaces, not adds, but just replaces plumbing fixtures, we follow up with a post-construction retrofit inspection.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, could either Mr. Carmel or Ms. Madrid give Director Rice feedback on what she just brought up? Any possibility of that since you've been here longer?
I don't know that I could add much more than what Melissa has said. The code does allow for transfers, but the mechanics of it were outside our scope.
Okay. Ms. Madrid?
One point that I think is important is that whoever's transferring the water, there is a review of how much water is left on the property, and it does have to meet whatever the requirements are of the property. So they have to be able to prove that they have sufficient water to transfer.
All right. Thank you. Vice President Steidel.
Actually, I think maybe that would addresses the question that was going to come to me, because I thought, okay, how far down can that go? And does the idea of retiring a commercial lot kick into place in some way?
Right. We would not allow someone to take, if they had two EDUs, they could not transfer the entire two EDUs. Whatever that use is for that property, say if they wanted it to just be retail, they would have to have a minimum of 0.43.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Rice, your light's back on.
So I have a list of questions that I think that it would be helpful if the board were able to have a more full discussion. This was great informational, and I know that in the past we used to get staff reports that included this many lot mergers happened, this many transfers of position happened in the last month. And recently we started getting some of those numbers, but having a table that said, here's how many things we processed in this section also allows us to ensure that we're not understaffing a department, that we don't need to have more money for the general manager to have appropriate staffing, because I don't know how much time all of this permitting stuff can take. But tracking the water use at any remodeled or reconstructed properties, I really think the board, if the language doesn't already say shall, I think the retrofit fees that are paid should be reserved for only lot mergers, because that's about reduction of use, or actual rebates that we have in the rebate program, which hasn't been in place for a little while because we've been, you know, we got down to almost nothing in the bank account, so we couldn't be doing rebates back in 2015, so we haven't really done any for a while. But I think that all the retrofit fees must go to something, even if it's just those five-minute timers to put next to your shower, something related to water conservation for the district, and not just anything the board wants. I think it should remain, because I think the intention of that fee is to help fund programs that reduce the overall water use for the district. There's a lot of opportunities we could take in ensuring that we get all of the benefit that we can get out of those things, and having the staff reports will be helpful to know if we're doing a lot of transfers, the lot retirements and the lot mergers. It would be helpful to have that information. And one of the things I'd like to suggest is, I think it wouldn't be out of line to have either an advisory commission or an ad hoc committee, maybe to start out with, to look at these issues relating to not just the code, but how do we set the policy so that we are getting the outcome that we desire, and the staff is getting what they need in terms of direction to ensure that they're doing the right thing. Having a checklist of what this process is would be helpful, but perhaps this is because it is complicated and there are all these settlements that we have to comply with and other things. I think it might be helpful to have an ad hoc. We don't have land use, but we do have stewardship and important services for treating wastewater and fire protection, that we need to be ensuring we have those resources available, whether it's for new development or revised development or whatever it is. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be looked at. This code was put in place a long time ago, and we've had the moratorium in place for a long time. It might not be a bad idea to put together a small committee, at least ad hoc, to start out with, to look at how we approach ensuring we're doing what we think we should be doing. Because I definitely think when it comes to things like single-family residences that end up appealed at the Coastal Commission, it's helpful. Like, I had no idea when that appeal came up there was anything related to we were complying with a court order or this was an already active meter. It just wasn't clear. So having that information would have been nice. It would have been nice to know that, that something was sent forward from the general manager, even if it is under the existing policy, what should be happening. You know, we should have known that that was going to the planning commission or the county or whoever it went to before it got appealed to Coastal. So I just a heads up on those things would be helpful. A simple table in staff reports could help.
I did reinstate that section. There's a permits and conservation section in the utilities report now, and it's a little bit beefier than it used to be. I used to just give a list of all of the different types of transactions that have been processed, but now it does actually list out the specific types, like whether it's a will serve and then what type of will serve. All of that is in there. You're welcome. And we also do have some exciting stuff coming up from the conservation side of things.
Director Howell.
Thank you. I agree with most of the points that have been made so far. In particular, Director Rice raised the issue that this section of our code is really, it's been around for quite a while. I think the last that I saw with the code, I think was 2013, was when it was last modified. So that's 6 years ago. Subsequently, situations have changed. I think that any question that anyone might have had about whether or not we were going to experience climate change, I think most everyone now would agree that that is something in our future. So I think there's a sufficient change that this section of code really does need to be readdressed to bring it in line with current conditions. excuse me. I don't mean any criticism of the past boards in this regard. In fact, under normal circumstances, in a situation of plenty, the board does not want to be or shouldn't be involved in the day-to-day operation or the approval of this or that building project, because that puts us in the position of possibly playing favorites or doing we have to do things legally and impartially. So it's important, and it's very nice. I don't have a problem intellectually with having with the process as it currently is, except that I think that the situation has changed, and it is therefore no longer appropriate that that staff have discretion in the area that we would normally provide them. So, for that reason, I'd like to ask that this be brought to us again for actual consideration and as well as discussion. And I might let me suggest to my fellow board members that possibly to save us some time and also as a chance to bring in a little more public input, but perhaps not in our own meeting, that this is something that would be appropriate to send to the policy committee for an initial investigation and have them ask them for a series of recommendations or alternatives that or some kind of an analysis that we could then react to ourselves. I think it might save us some time.
Director Pearson.
Just quickly, I'm a little concerned about us going ahead and doing this now and taking 3 months, and then we get the CDP done, and we have to change it all again, probably, maybe, whatever. So I'm not ready to do the ad hoc committee yet. I think that unless you want to assign it to the same ad hoc committee that's doing the CDP work, and maybe they can do the same thing as they go along, they can get a feel for it. But I'm a little bit concerned about doing this three times as we, you know, get, you know, the CDP approved. And then, you know, the Urban Water Master Plan done and approved and all of that kind of slides together. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. But if we want to go ahead, we can.
Vice President Steidel.
I wanted to voice my support for the things that Director Rice had discussed as well as Director Howell, because I think both Director Howell and I have achieved a new level of sensitivity about the district codes in being involved in that affordable housing ad hoc committee, because we're finding in the district information that there are some things that need to be addressed, that need to be changed relative to that. And that sits outside of anything that would be effective as far as the CDP is concerned, as far as I could determine. So I think that we can go ahead and go forward with things that we've been discussing and suggesting between ourselves as far as those changes. But I agree that when we have a little bit of breathing room, that we need to take the opportunity to try to understand the updates that we need to make.
Director Rice.
I just want to suggest that we should probably consider these specific issues of letters of intent from the perspective and independent of whether we have adequate water supply, because that does make a change in when you can issue a intent to serve letter, but I think that eventually at some point there's probably going to have to be one new intent to serve at some point down the road where we have a CDP or we don't. There's too many variables to know what will happen in the future with that, but we should have a process in place so that if the moratorium was lifted, we already know here's the policies on getting an intent to serve letter, enacting your will serve letter, or requesting a will serve letter for your remodeling project or whatever. That I think that we should be considering those independent of the adequate water supply issue, which is the bigger issue we do need to address as a board, but the adequate water supply doesn't necessarily need to inform the updates of how we would like to see the implementation of issuing intent to serve letters or will serve letters or whatever it happens to transfer of positions. I think that we can consider that independent of supply. It doesn't mean that we then immediately give out intent to serve letters. I mean, we could even do a preamble prior to that that says there has to be an adequate supply for these rules to be in effect or something if people are concerned about the protection of the resource in relation to how do we do these legal things that are required by the county so somebody could build or remodel or whatever it is that we're doing.
Well, Vice President Steidel.
A suggestion would be if we want to take some increment of this and take a look at it or at least get our hands around it, I would suggest determining the legal obligations that we have on the active intent to serve letters. Because I think looking at that and understanding that will at least...
Well, that's what I asked for, back in February.
Right.
So maybe we can discuss it more in February when we get that information.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
Director Howell.
Yeah. Everything, it makes sense to me. I think the one area where if there were some way, how can I say this? And I think the point I was trying to make is that the discretion that staff is now allowed in this process seems to me to be appropriate under certain conditions. I don't think it's appropriate under the conditions that we now are. So I would like to see at least a temporary limitation of that 3 EDU allowance that the GM has to go ahead and approve something. I have several reservations, and this is where I think that scarcity does become an issue. Even though it's very important that our processes be legal, fully understood, and that we go forward that way. But under this circumstance, in the studies that Director Steidel and I have commenced doing, I'm beginning to have the suspicion that we possibly should not even be allowing additional commercial use at this point, that any additional water we have, it's possible, should only go to affordable housing. There's wording in the various pieces of code that tend to imply this. I'm not saying this now, I'm just saying this sense has come across me on my radar, and so I would like to limit the staff's discretion at this juncture as a temporary measure while we examine the issues and maybe come up with something a little more robust. So that's the only reason that I was, if there's some other way to accomplish that, or just as a informal direction to staff, that might be sufficient. It's under these circumstances, I think almost every extension, everything that happens really does need to come in front of us because of the situation that we are now in. Anyway, next.
Director Pearson.
Okay, so I would recommend we get the list next time and we get the legal opinion on where we stand, and then I think that discussion is the next step.
Just close your eyes, Harry.
Seeing no more lights on up here, and hopefully my light is on, I'd just like to make a couple of comments on this particular item, which is basically about intent to serve letters and lot transfers. Having lived here in this community for 33 years, on more than one occasion, I've seen small, attractive dwellings that had been in this community for many years, perhaps we could say decades, be purchased, water meters transferred, and those dwellings, which were adequate for one or two people, which could certainly be used now, considering the affordable housing crisis that exists just about everywhere on this planet in the state of California, and even here in Cambria, obviously, we've discussed this before, that always troubled me, seeing that happen. With regard to, we occasionally mention here climate change, if I could just say climate crisis, I think if we look at what's going on the planet right now, we are in crisis. And any decisions made with regard to our use or misuse of water in this community should always be considered and addressed. With regard to intent to serve letters that have been recently been issued by staff that have ultimately gone on to the Planning Commission and then to the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission, as advised by staff, their hardworking staff, have unanimously voted against intent to serve letters that have been issued by this community. In the past, we've had, how could we say it, a relatively tenuous relationship with Coastal Commission because of some of the things that we have and haven't done here at the district with regard to our obligation, our responsibility in interacting with the Coastal Commission. And we need to consider that, especially at this point in time. And so with regard to, especially right now, probably one of the most important issues that this district is considering is forwarding the coastal development permit when we finally get that a little bit more organized here, is forwarding that to the Coastal Commission and hoping that it will meet with their approval. So I think right now what's really of value more than anything is having, like I said, an agreeable relationship with the Coastal Commission. And I personally don't feel that forwarding intent to serve projects that are given intent to serve letters to the Coastal Commission, which are ultimately unanimously voted against having, you know, is the direction we should be going right now. And just to follow up on policy, and I believe Director Howell and I have discussed, since he is the head of policy committee, and it's obviously been brought to the attention of the board here today, that perhaps we need to revisit policy and determine if it should be the decision of staff and the general manager with regard to issuing intent to serve letters, or if it should become before the board for discussion by the public. So that's my take on this item. Director Pearson.
Just briefly, none of what we've sent to the Coastal Commission in the last year is a new intent to serve letter. None
right.
of them.
Those were legal
obligations. Those were legal obligations that we already had. The affordable housing was an extension of an existing that we all voted in favor of. And the other ones were transfers or whatever that just got will serve letters. There was no new intent to serve letters
right.
created by this board or by the general manager.
Well, thank you. I'll still stick with the comments that I've made. So, Director Rice.
I just wanted to make one suggestion that might meet the requirements that Director Howell is asking for, is that maybe we should get approval. We should look at a policy that would require approval for any project that requires retrofit points, meaning they're going to potentially add usage for that home because they're adding fixtures or a bathroom or whatever, because really it's unfair to people who are waiting to build if I get to just remodel and put two new bathrooms and in two new bedrooms when that person can't even build a one-bedroom, one-bathroom house. So I think maybe that would achieve what the goal of what you're looking for is to, that maybe that's an approach to take to start out.
Thank you. Ms. Bland, did you wish to make any further comments on this item before we move forward?
I would just offer the clarification that not everybody who is doing a remodel gets assigned or has to purchase retrofit points. It would be impact fees for remodels. Retrofit points are only if they're like doing a demo and rebuild and they're expand, like they're, you know, they the project that they demoed and then maybe transferred was like a two-bedroom, two-bath, mm-hmm. and they're building a three-bedroom, three-bath, then they have to purchase retrofit points to offset that that addition.
Okay, so impact and retrofit fees or whatever. I think if it looks like it's going to put an impact on the water usage, that if that's the concern, that's the concern I'm hearing here, so...
Thank you. Well, I think we had a fairly extensive discussion on this item, and it was put on this agenda so there could be more public understanding of this issue by folks that have been concerned and also the general public. All right, moving forward now to agenda item 5B, and Mr. Weigel, would you introduce this item, please?
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 5B is a discussion and consideration of annual review of Board of Director bylaws. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider the Board bylaws and provide direction regarding any changes that you would like to make and have brought back for adoption.
Right.
And the bylaws are included as an attachment.
All right, thank you. We actually have some public comment requests to speak on this item, and our first request is from Mike Lyons.
Thank you, Mike Lyons, Cambria. Is that on? Yeah. I refer specifically.
Would you light on? Not that one on the mic.
There you go. Okay, thank you. Mike Lyons, Cambria. I'm referring specifically on 5B to section 9.4A, which has to do with committees. I have about 2 years' worth of participation on your standing committees, first with the resources and infrastructure and later with the policy. So I feel I have a little bit of experience in these matters, and I have some suggestions to make when you get around to reviewing the bylaws or at least looking at what improvements you might make. These comments that I'm going to make are in no way, I'm not in no way suggesting that you use my wording, but I think the subject should be covered, and I do believe that the committee section of the bylaws should be expanded and be more specific. So the first one, it would be a change to to say that the duties and responsibilities of standing committees are at the direction and discretion of the Board of Directors. The second would be that only the board president and general manager may speak for the district. Without prior authorization, no member of a standing committee is authorized to speak for the organization in any public forum. Number three, standing committees are advisory to the board of directors. Once the committees have settled upon their recommendations to the board, committee members may not, in their capacity as sworn members of the district, work against those recommendations or board decisions. And fourth, the right of free speech applies to all, but standing committee members may not make mention of their association with the CCSD in any capacity when at public meetings and hearings, even if they qualify their comments by saying they are not speaking for the district. As background on that, I would like to read carefully wrote a statement that intends to be more of a general policy than anything else. At a meeting of the County Planning Commission on December 20th, I think I'm only going to have 33 seconds left, so should I continue or?
Sure, go ahead, Mike.
Okay. At a meeting of the County Planning Commission on December 20th, it was a videotape that I watched. At this meeting, a current member, I'm deliberately using the word they, on one of your standing committees, prefaced their remarks by stating association with the CCSD and NCAC ad hoc committees. Although they later qualified the presentation of these credentials by saying they were speaking as a private citizen, in my opinion, the reference to membership with the CCSD was improper. Any person listening to that public comment might well have assumed some special knowledge about the workings of the district, and I do not think that this is proper. Indeed, it seemed to me at that hearing that the presentation of these credentials did cause unnecessary questioning and confusion. In fact, the speaker went on to make a number of statements that are inaccurate and misleading, and in my opinion, damaging to the CCSD. But I will not take time here to refuse those misstatements, nor to name the person. I intend for this to be an example of the dire need for changes in your bylaws to prevent the type of confusion and destruction of the authority of the CCSD in the future. My contention is that all of you board members, staff, and standing committee members work very hard to formulate these policies in serving all members of the Cambria community. It should not happen that a member of your own organization works against district policies and decisions and at the same time mentions any connection with the district. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mike. And just to let you know, I allowed you to go over an extra minute. So I'll subtract that the next time you get up. That was a joke. Our next request to speak is from Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen from Cambria, California, and I refer you, please, to Section 3 in your bylaws concerning agendas. And I'll give you an example of why I'm raising this. Listening to the discussion of intent to serve letters, I was amazed at the complexity of the references to EDUs, both residential and commercial, because that wasn't in the description, really, of the agenda item. I had already spoken and so had no chance whatsoever to respond to that. But I'd like to point out to you that it says here clearly there's only one occasion, really, to respond to agenda items for the public, but there is no occasion whatsoever to raise a ruckus. And now, of course, you wouldn't put in there, dear public, please raise a ruckus at your convenience. But I want to say about this example I'm using, I would urge you as directors, even though it is not stipulated in the bylaws, I would urge you to take a certain amount of time to look at your CCSD website, to look at the documents that set policy for this district, because you will find out that a residential EDU is 12 units bi-monthly allocation. And you will then conclude, hold it a second, that's very interesting then for determining commercial allocation, etc. I bring it up now because I could not bring it up when it was mentioned. That, I mean, your confusion about what an EDU was. I urge you very much on certain key policy issues that you're now facing in developing an urban water management plan and a coastal development permit for the plant. I urge you to find out carefully the facts that are necessary to make wise decisions about this. I will send you an email, not in condescension, but in an attempt to be assisting you. I will send you an email in the next several days about some of the factual information that it is important for you to look at as a board, even though in your bylaws it doesn't really stipulate that that kind of being informed is part of your authority as directors. I will now ask you to consider that at your leisure. Thank you.
Thank you. See no further requests to speak on this item. I'll open this for board discussion. Director Rice.
I just have a couple of things I'd like to see changed. I'd like to add guidelines for the release of the agenda packet and maybe some language in the agenda section relating to...
Could you give us a number on that, please, and page number?
Page number 54. I'm looking at number 3 agendas.
Okay.
And I don't have the specific language. I'm just going to talk generally what I think the things are that need to be changed. I don't have the specific language already written. So I think that we should have guidelines for releasing the agenda packet, whether we say that we just have to comply with the 72 hours, which would mean 2 p.m. Monday, or Friday. It would be good for the staff to know if you have a part of the agenda packet, like, say, a staff report or a document waiting, that it shouldn't be included in the agenda packet because it's technically not really ready. That would probably be helpful for determining what goes on to the agenda. Like, for example, the MOU just needed a signature, so all the document was there when the whole packet was released, but they needed a signature, so they added it later. So that would be okay to add, but maybe we should be saying if you don't have a report ready when the rest of the packet's ready. Those kinds of that's something I'd like to see maybe in there that might be helpful for our meetings. Also being cognizant of the fact that we've now limited our meetings to 3 hours apiece. And we have 2 a month, so we should be able to do it. But when preparing the agenda, we should be cognizant of the fact that that's part of what our bylaws say, that our meetings are limited to 3 hours. So having this many number of items on the agenda, it's a time constraint. And I know I talk a lot, but... And so I'm part of the problem. I want to acknowledge that. But I think it's also imperative that we all have a chance to give the input we need to do, which maybe means we need to not put so many things onto the agenda. Because once you break it down among 5 people plus public comment, another thing that I would like to see changed is number 6, authority of directors. 6.3C, it just says appointment of a general manager to handle all matters concerning. I think we should be adding in oversight and evaluation to appointment in that specific statement. And I don't know whether or not it would be good to put a parallel statement about the district council or not, but I think that that's one of our authorities too, is to hire district council for the district. The other things that I had is just mainly minor language changes, including in section 9 regarding. Oh wait, is it section 9? I want to say it's section 9, but maybe not. That's committees. I agree with Mr. Lyons about looking at our committees section, but I think many of his suggestions are more appropriate for the bylaws for the committees themselves. One of the things that we did early in my time here on the board was we took what was a 14-page bylaws document and we whittled it down to something more manageable with the intention, not knowing a drought was coming, with the intention of putting together a board policies and procedures manual that essentially said things like the more intricate details of how the board does its business. So I don't want to add and that would be where we could put things like board staff interaction. But that's a historical. The last suggestion is under director guidelines number 7.1. And this is about communication. When the board members making a request to the general manager shall have access to information relative to the operation of CCSD and what to do if he doesn't have the information. But I also think we should put a positive statement in there that the GM should provide the response to all board members, because the board members are all supposed to have the same information. So responses from the GM to a request from a specific board member should be, I think. But again, those are the things for discussion in looking at the bylaws. And I don't know how the board wants to go forward with making those changes.
Mr. Carmel, would you like to make any comment on this?
we're listening carefully, but we're really trying to look for specific direction on specific bylaws and get consensus for the board so we can bring them back in February.
Director Pearson.
I also had a couple of suggestions. Under area number one, do we want to put in a paragraph about what we do to replace somebody under resignation? What process that would be, or is that a policy?
That was one of the things we took out of the bylaws, I believe, when we shortened them down, intending to put it into a board procedures manual that we don't have. But we could add it back into the bylaws, I think. It's not a bad idea.
I think we need it somewhere, but the other one for the same area is, do we want to put something in there about transitioning and making sure that the vice president is not up for election in the year that he or she is serving, so that there is some transition of officer and agenda knowledge going forward. Just two suggestions.
Vice President Stidell.
You're off.
Okay.
I mean, it was already addressed.
All right. Thank you. So it would appear that staff has a little bit to work on.
Well, I don't think we got consensus on those issues, because I brought up a lot of things that may not be, that the majority may not be in agreement with needing to be changed. So I think it's important that we get some consensus on. Specifically, I can go through mine again, and we can kind of do a. We don't need to vote.
Can
we want to do that?
Can we form an ad hoc committee to report back in February with all recommendations
to work with staff maybe to get those changes?
Yes.
So we have a suggestion for the board.
Instead of having the whole board go over that at this time.
That's a much more efficient approach.
Yeah.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Does that mean that we could actually form an ad hoc committee at this moment?
Sure.
While we're discussing this item? So, all right. So considering Director Rice brought up many suggestions and revisions, perhaps she should be on that committee. Any other volunteers? If not, I'm more than willing to do it.
Sounds right. Good to me.
Okay. Well, it's going to be Rice Farmer.
And specifically, your task is to work with staff to make revisions to the bylaws and put them in context that we can then vote on individual items.
Okay.
At the February meeting.
Right. So the ones that I had, we can then vote on individually at the next meeting.
Same with Mr. Lyons. I think we ought to get take his input, because I think I personally agree with most of, but not all, of what he had forward to.
Yeah. In fact, Mike, I was going to make this suggestion, and I think now, since it's been brought back to my attention, if you could just give us, you know, a written statement of what you put out, and, you know, maybe give it to the clerk if you can do that, or maybe send an email. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Well, thank you very much. And then she can just pass it on to Ms. Rice and myself.
Are there any other suggestions from the board members
I'd like to weigh in.
Director Howell.
I, first of all, I agree with everything that's said so far. So please do go forth and do that. I wanted to comment a little bit about the process for filling vacancies, not only on the board here, but also in the committees, and the process as how we elect our officers. We've been tending to do it by motion. I think that I'd appreciate it if the ad hoc committee could review Robert's rules regarding how to conduct an election, because I think that would be a better way to go, in that that's where you have a slate of nominees and then people vote. It has to be public because it's a Brown Act thing. But that way people vote for who they want. What concerns me is the process that we have now, especially with regarding filling committees where we're asking for volunteers, is that when we do it by motion, it puts people in the position of voting against somebody. And I would rather see it so that we don't have to put people into that position of being rejected. I think it would be better to say, oh, I came in second, is a lot easier to take than I was just voted down. I think it's something that it's an area that, and this is only a suggestion, but I'm particularly concerned with how our volunteers, especially when we ask people to step up, or when we ask people to step up to volunteer for a vacancy here, that we don't want to subject people to a lot of embarrassment or otherwise any kind of... We want it to be as friendly a process as we can possibly make it. So that I'd like to just pass mm-hmm. that on to you guys. I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, just the idea of a friendly process is something we can all wrap our arms around. Vice President Steidel.
I just wanted to say that I had agreed with all of the suggestions that have been brought forward this afternoon as far as the bylaws are concerned.
And as a member of the board who voted to appoint Director Pearson under a very confusing process, I'm sure that his thoughts on that specific area might be helpful. And it may not be in the bylaws this time, but something that we aim to do by the end of the year, so that if we do have a... Because I personally don't ever want to have to go through that kind of process again, because it was embarrassing for the board, it was difficult for the candidates who wanted to be appointed. So I definitely agree we need something like that. I don't know that we will be able to do it in these bylaws in February, but it's as long as that's copacetic with the board, we may leave that one off right now and stick to... Is that agreeable, President Farmer?
I would say so. Just thinking back to the appointment of officers to this board, the appointment of directors to this board when folks resigned was certainly one of the more, how could we say it, disagreeable experiences that we've had for both the board and the community. So we'll be revisiting this item in February, and what we're going to do right now is take a 10-minute break, and we'll return.
President Farmer?
Yes, Vice President Steidel.
I was just wondering, there was some mention in whether or not the committee bylaws needed to be adjusted also. And initially when we established the committee bylaws. It was an across-the-board application for all of them, which lends itself to the idea that when we go through this and address the issues that Mr. Lyons had addressed, that that may be something for discussion as far as whether that would be part of the individual committee bylaws also.
And the standing committee bylaws should be mentioned in the committee section.
All right. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We will resume this meeting at 5 minutes after 4 o'clock by that clock behind me here, not that one back there. Thank you. Let's keep our fingers crossed on that. All right, welcome back to the viewing audience and to those right here in the building. We are moving on to agenda item 5C, and Mr. Weigel, would you please introduce this item?
Yes, Mr. President, for agenda item 5C, discussion and consideration to develop the board's strategic focus and plan. Staff recommends, and this is a continuation, I should add, from my evaluation session, one of the issues I raised there. Staff is recommending that the board of directors discuss and consider embarking on a process to create a strategic focus. The goal of the strategic focus is to ensure maximum alignment between CCSD's resources and activities with the district's policy direction, district-wide organizational structure, employee and stakeholder interests, and customer service expectations. The strategic focus is also is intended to guide CCSD in successfully advancing the district's vision and priorities over the next long period of time. Typically 5 to 10 years, but as you see fit. The strategic focus development process will address CCSD's mission, guiding principles, strategic goals and objectives, and vision, and will result in an updated and refined guidance for the board, its committees, and district staff, and I'd also add the community as a whole, from which to operate and provide support through changing conditions and into the future. We've attached a couple of attachments that to help think about this, but attachment C you can utilize to facilitate discussions, but I think at the end of this agenda item that the two things that the board may consider would be one, to decide if this is an initiative worthy. Two, perhaps set up an ad hoc committee to then work with the staff and come up with options for consideration of a facilitator who could then work with the staff to scope out this initiative, both from a time consideration, a cost consideration, and perhaps even looking at doing this in phases, because this is a lot to bite off. But I think this truly it would be helpful for the district as a whole, because we don't have an overarching framework through which to think about all these initiatives that we're working through, So I will turn it over to you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Weigold. We have two requests to speak on item 5C. The first is Christine Heinrich.
Thank you again. And thank you for bringing this subject, the subject of the board's strategic focus and plan, up for discussion. It's important to know what you're doing in order to know whether you are getting there. As Yogi Berra said, if you don't know where you're going, you might end up someplace else. The first chart, with its four elements, is clear and makes sense. The second would serve well as a bad example of how to confuse and obfuscate. I hope the board will pursue a discussion that all can follow and will lead to clarity. The chart is attributed to a professional management consultant, perhaps what Mr. Weigel is referring to as a facilitator. While that qualification may be impressive, I don't think his expertise is needed in Cambria. Surely our board can hold discussions of these issues as they pertain to Cambria CSD, with its primary responsibilities for water and wastewater for 6,000 people. Board President Harry Farmer, with his years of experience in Cambria, is well suited to lead these discussions. No consultant needed. Now, I have a little more time. Could I add a comment on the intent to serve letters discussion? No? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen from Cambria. I find this vast and absolutely fascinating. On page 57, the strategic planning model has a complexity that is beyond verbal description, perhaps. But it did come to my mind that it would be fun for me to print out each rectangle and then take it to the second grade class. They're learning about maps and graphs and things. And take it to the second grade class and have two students hold each rectangle and then have bright colored yarn between them, and they could see how all of these connect. I think I might actually try that. I think it's a fascinating possibility. But I really commend the possibility of getting a strong sense of what exactly you think you're about. We should all do that, just get a strong sense of purpose. And I hope that when you look at this map plan model, that you look at the North Coast General Plan and specifically what pertains to Cambria and San Simeon. Because in the North Coast General Plan, and specifically with regard to Cambria and San Simeon, you will find the general goals for Cambria and San Simeon are listed. They've been revised most recently in 2018. This is the county document, remember, that is required for us. And if you look at those goals, and I won't read you all of them at all here right now, but if you look at the goals, the very first one is environment. And it says there, maintain and protect a living environment that is safe, healthful, and pleasant for all residents by, and then it gives specific actions. One, assuring the protection of coastal resources such as wetlands, coastal streams, forests, marine habitats, and wildlife, including threatened and endangered species. Now, you know me. I walk to Santa Rosa Creek Beach, and I greet now the 5 dozen snowy plovers sitting there, threatened and endangered as they are. But this springs to my mind. How are we protecting them? The next step in reaching the environment goal, conserving non-renewable resources and replenishing renewable resources. Well, specifically, how are you going to map out your strategy toward what goal, keeping these goals absolutely at the forefront? So I think it's a fascinating idea, whether it's a facilitator, as the general manager has said, or as he also said, a vendor. A vendor brings what you can guess what symbol to my mind. It's a huge, humongous dollar sign, and the second graders are now trying to learn the meaning of money. And I realize that they are telling me more about the abstraction of money and the purposes it serves than I often hear here in this meeting. So maybe we should get together with the second graders, and we can look at this plan and this model, and we can talk about the money involved, too. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll open this up for item up to board discussion. And I see Ms. Rice has her light on. Director Rice.
I 100% support this
process to get a strategic focus and plan together. I think a facilitator would be helpful to keep us on track and getting from going sideways. We have a lot of complicated issues here in town, and it's easy for us to get derailed even when we are paying attention to stay focused on topic. So I think somebody who doesn't necessarily know the ins and outs in politics of Cambria could be helpful for facilitating a process that includes the board and the public. And that is to say nothing of President Farmer's ability to facilitate a meeting. It's more about having somebody to do that so that he's free to focus on what he would like to give as input for that strategic focus and plan. In relation to Dr. Bettenhausen's comments about the North Coast Area Plan and the goals, while I may agree with them and we may want to include them in our planning and in our guiding principles or however we end up including them, I want to make sure that people are aware we are not part of the county. Their goals are not our goals. Some of the goals that are in that plan for Cambria are the responsibility of the county and not us. Some of them are the responsibility of the county and us. And some of them are critical for this town, but the county doesn't think it is a priority. So I just want to be very clear that the county's goals, they have land use authority. We do not have land use authority. We are responsible for good stewardship of resources and for fire protection. So I just want to be very clear that, because we're not a subdivision of the state or the county, we're an independent district, which means that it's good to use that maybe as a guidelines, but it's not necessarily our authority. So 100% in support. I think a facilitator would be helpful. And thank you.
Vice President Stidell.
Thank you, President Farmer. I wanted to second a statement that Director Rice had made, and that had to do with having a facilitator which would allow all of the directors to participate in what was going on. Unfortunately, if you have someone who's part of, if any one of us were to be facilitating this process, that would mean that we wouldn't be participating in it, and I don't think that that's appropriate. I think we all need to participate, and we probably would do well by having an opportunity to have someone provide us some constraining direction and keeping us on course. I believe very strongly in this, and we've had some amount of conversation with it when we were in closed session, but I do think that the lack of having some of these things in place has created the environment of CCSD being a reactive organization rather than a proactive organization. Historically, I think that we would do much better by keeping focused to the things that we need to be putting our resources and our attention to by having these things in place. And it would allow us also to think a little bit down line and perhaps consider those kinds of things that we would need to address as an issue coming up to at least recognize that there's something sitting out there that we kind of need to keep in the back pocket for what are we going to do if. And that helps us be less reactive in our planning and our decision making.
Director Pearson.
I would like to recommend that we go ahead and form an ad hoc committee to work with the staff to see about getting a facilitator consultant. I also agree with that being the only way you will properly get this done. They add a lot by making sure that you don't get off course. They add a lot by making sure that everybody gets to speak and that kind of thing. And they're good at it because they've done a lot of it. So I would recommend that we form an ad hoc committee that is specifically to engage with the staff in finding a consultant and then bringing back to the board a plan of how we would proceed with either consultant A or consultant B if there's two viable candidates, and go from there. And I volunteer to be one of the people on the ad hoc.
Yes, Vice President Steidel.
I would volunteer to be on the ad hoc also, unless there's someone else on the board who feels strongly about being the participant in that.
Director Howell.
I'm glad that, that our my fellow directors are stepping up to doing that. Again, I agree with everything that's been said so far. The only, I do have one reservation, and it's more a question probably of, I can't find the word. I want to say focus, but that's not really what I mean. When we speak about the directions and the strategic plan that the board has, we do have to remember that boards are temporary. This is not going to be the same board that sits here next year. So I think it behooves us as we pursue this, which I think is important, I think we really need to vary from the very beginning, and I think maybe it's already been said, but I just want to be sure that whatever planning we do in this regard, we do make sure that the public is engaged with this, because it is really the real question is, as I see it, what does this community want to do, and can this community reach some kind of agreement or substantial agreement as to some way forward in as we move forward. Understanding that not everyone's going to agree, but I think that they need to be part of this discussion, because the five of us could achieve a strategic plan, but doesn't mean that the next board is going to do that, is going to follow it. So for that reason, I think it should be a combined. I mean, but I firmly agree that an outside, someone who's not a member of this community, who's expert at doing this kind of thing, is definitely what we want. But you definitely do not want somebody who lives here. It has to be completely, in order to be totally fair to all points of view. But yes, so yes, please do go forth and let's do it.
And we needed somebody from Milwaukee or something.
Yeah, there you go, right.
Green Bay, maybe.
Well, you got a good client.
In any case, I agree the community has to have some input, but I think the staff is also very, very key to this, because they're the ones that are going to execute the vision and the mission, okay, and they have to be bought in and 100% in whatever it is we come up with. So.
I move that we approve an ad hoc committee with directors Steidel and Pearson as the members to put together an initial plan for strategic focus and plan.
I'll second that motion.
Could we have a roll call, please, Ms. Madrid?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
No. I just would like to ask our general manager, do you, the person that has drawn up these plans here that you have with this item, Mr. Chip Wood, do you intend to perhaps recommend that he or someone that you know, associate of his, might be the facilitator?
That's really a decision for the board, not mine.
All right. So are we finished with this item? I would just like to make a comment that however this board and this district move forward into the decade ahead, that we how we embrace the future of this community not come from some of the so-called planning of the past. And first and foremost, we consider the natural environment within which we live and using the resources of that environment for the well-being of the community as well as the well-being of the all life in nature. And also that we as a society, you know, we're living in this fairly, how could we say it, competitive, materialistic, I hesitate to say militaristic, society that we live in. And I would hope that any decision-making that we make moving forward not fall into that mindset, but be more embracing of how we create a better future for this community and the planet. That may not seem to be totally appropriate for what we're discussing here, but that's how I feel.
President Farmer?
Yes.
I think those are excellent, excellent ways to describe guiding principles that the board could be considering, because I think that those kinds of things, proper stewardship to the whole community, whether it's plants, animals, or people, and those are the kinds of things that hopefully we will end up with at the end of the process of this process. I'm hopeful that that's what we will end up with, something like that.
Thank you. Moving on to item 5D, General Manager Weigel, would you introduce this item, please?
Mr. President, agenda item 5D is the discussion and consideration to appoint an ad hoc committee to explore the potential creation of a regional wastewater facility. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider appointing an ad hoc committee to explore the potential creation of a regional wastewater facility in cooperation with the San Simeon Community Services District.
Thank you. We have two requests to speak on this item. And welcome back, Hank. Hank Kruchak from San Simeon.
I have to commend you all on your endurance, number one. These are unusually long meetings for San Simeon. They would be. First, I'm really encouraged by the fact that this subject is on the agenda, that you're willing to put it on the agenda and consider this. It's not a trivial item. And I'm hopeful that you will approve the ad hoc committee this afternoon. I have a second page that I handed out, which is about the regional wastewater treatment steps to a go, no-go decision. What I've laid out here is a little bit of a plan, a starting a thought plan for the ad hoc committee, a little bit presumptuous that you will approve, but to make a decision within 18 to 24 months, rather than dragging this on, these numbers aren't that hard. To put a pipeline in and a pump station down there is not rocket science. It's $1 million a mile, roughly. It's about $2.5 million for a fancy station to pump, but you're going to have to pay for that anyway. So it's not a huge amount of money in the scheme of things, but what I'm suggesting here is kind of a three-phased approach. The first is to get an initial memorandum of understanding, not a large one, Tim, but you know, like a two-pager or something that the parties agree on. There's reasons for doing that. It shows a formal commitment, and as Director Howell pointed out, there's going to be an election next year. Some of the board members are going to turn over. And so a memorandum of understanding kind of commits you at a very high level to participate. And that includes state parks as well, who, when I worked at the state, it was difficult to engage them in various projects, I'll be frank. Okay? And so so a letter or a memorandum of understanding, a brief one, kind of formally commits the parties. It provides a timeline. And the funding for both grants has been approved. The Coastal Commission has approved the $130,000 plus $30,000 from San Simeon, and the National Wildlife Fish and Wildlife
Foundation has approved another $240,000, of which half of that is paid by San Simeon. So there's funding now available, so you could look for the consultant now to get started. But the idea is, what I'm suggesting over the next 6 months, is to get a memorandum of understanding so all the parties are committed to do this study and to reach a go-no-go decision by hopefully next June or July before the election. Okay, so we have the same players on. So there's a reason for 18 months that's valid, in my mind, anyway. And I'll try and come back in the future here with some financials as well, you know, estimates of the costs and the benefits to both parties. And I've done some rate impact analysis for our customers, and I think that's going to be pretty nominal in 3 to 5 years with our planned rate increases. Thank you.
Thank you, Hank. Our next request to speak is from Christine Heinrich.
Hello again. Thank you for bringing the issue of regional wastewater treatment to the public. I ask that the ad hoc committee consider 21st century solutions to treating wastewater, such as constructed wetlands or a horizontal levee, in their discussions. 21st century water use requires us to think of wastewater as a valuable resource rather than a problem to be disposed of. Constructed wetlands are also less expensive than industrial wastewater treatment plants. In working with the San Simeon CSD, I asked the board and our new utilities manager to remember that the grandfathered ocean outfall in San Simeon is under Coastal Commission oversight. New additional discharges, such as brine waste from the emergency water supply project, are unlikely to be permitted. The outfall discharges into the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary and the Cambria State Marine Park, discharging contaminated brine waste into this protected area, will not be allowed. I ask that the ad hoc committee make regular reports to the board and the public on its progress. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further requests to comment on this item, I'd like to open it to board discussion. Director Pearson.
I would recommend that the ad hoc committee consist of President Farmer and Director Rice, as they attended the last meeting, and that's, I think, a good group to continue working on that one.
All right. Any other comments on that? Yes, Vice President Steidel.
I agree, Director Pearson, and I would make a motion that we establish an ad hoc committee to explore potential creation of regional water wastewater facility, not water wastewater, but just wastewater facility, with the participants of that ad hoc committee being Director or President Farmer and Director Rice.
Director Howell.
I'll second that.
Under discussion, I cannot participate in this committee. I'm sorry to say.
You know, one of the dilemmas, if I could just interject here, one of the dilemmas that we have is that two of the board members, well, actually, we have three board members here who are up for election, or let's say re-election, this coming year. I believe Director Rice has indicated that she's not going to run again. I don't want to put words in the mouth of Director Pearson, but I think he's indicated to me in the past that he's not that keen on being on the board another 4 years. Would that be a correct assessment there?
Yes, I have no plans to run it this time.
All right. So it appears that I'm the only willing victim with regard to running in 2020. So therefore, I'm either going to be an ad hoc committee of one or someone else on the board here. Director Howell, would you be interested in being a member of this committee?
I volunteer to be on this committee.
Cool. Thank you. All right. So we've.
I would like to amend the motion to have the participants for the said ad hoc committee to be President Farmer and Director Howell.
All right. Do we have a second on this?
I'll second.
Thank you. Ms. Madrid, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
President Farmer?
Aye.
As an adjunct to this, at the R&I committee the other day, there were some questions about public participation in ad hoc committees. Mr. Carmel, can you give us a rundown on the Brown Act for that, just so that we're clear on that one?
That's public participation on ad hoc committees?
Yes, sir.
It's not addressed in the Brown Act. It's left at the discretion of the ad hoc committee. Oh. You know, typically it's very informal, but there's nothing to prevent the ad hoc committee from inviting the public if they so desire. You probably know a lot of this is done in your home or in a restaurant or coffee shop, but it's not actually addressed. It's not required to comply with the Brown Act.
Okay, great. Thank you.
But there can't be a member of the public. An ad hoc committee has to be board members only, right?
No, it's solely board members.
Okay, thank you.
If I could just... Yes, Director Pearson, did you want to make another comment? I do want to make this comment that there have been two meetings of staff and members of the board of directors of both San Simeon and Cambria with regard to this issue of ocean outfall and taking wastewater from San Simeon to Cambria's wastewater facility. And I have participated in both of those. Director Pearson was at the first one, and Director Rice was at the second one. So it is kind of an awkward situation for Director Howell to step into because he essentially totally unfamiliar with this process. But it's like the only option we have other than Vice President Steidel. So we'll just have to do what we can to get Director Howell up to speed as rapidly as possible. Yes, Vice President Steidel.
I mean, one option is that, you know, I had put myself forward for a different ad hoc just a few minutes ago. And I guess that, you know, that could certainly be considered that if anyone else on the committee would like to participate in that ad hoc, and then I would be happy to be involved with the wastewater facility ad hoc. You know, it's the call of the other members of the board. I would be happy to serve in either resource.
Director Pearson.
Yeah, I think we've spread the responsibilities around well. I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
All right. So I think we have finished with this item. And now we move on to item 5E. General Manager Weigold, would you introduce this item, please?
Mr. President, can I just get clarification on the ad hoc assignments?
So, sure.
So is it the ad hoc for the work with this, with the San Simeon CSD, is that Howell and Farmer, or is that...
That's correct.
Okay. Yes.
We remain
okay
with that.
Got it.
And the strategic plan is Director Pearson and Vice President Steidel.
Got it. I just want to make sure I heard correctly there.
All right.
Okay, agenda item 5E is discussion and consideration of adoption of policy 1030, which is Code of Ethics, and to develop an approach for implementing and understanding the policy. Staff is recommending that the board consider adoption of draft policy 1030 Code of Ethics and develop an approach for implementing and understanding the policy. This is an item brought to the board, brought back to the board after further review by the policy committee and at the regular board meeting in December. Based on the board's decision to go ahead with plan to develop a strategy, I would, however, amend the recommendation to hold off on the core value section because that would be part of your charter for developing the strategy.
All right, thank you. Let me open... Well, first, we do have one request to speak on this item from the public, and that would be Christine Heinrichs.
Hello again. I support the adoption of a code of ethics for the board. The directors should commit themselves to complying with all relevant regulations of agencies which have jurisdiction in Cambria, such as state and federal fish and wildlife agencies and the Coastal Commission. Cambria can be a leader in environmental stewardship. Please show your commitment by adopting this code of ethics for yourselves. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That's the only request to speak. Do we have, yes, Vice President Stidell.
I have a number of things that I'd like to put forward for consideration. So I don't know if you want to take just one segment at a time, or do you want me just to go ahead and address, run through what I've got?
Well, why don't we do one segment at a time?
Okay. There, in terms of developing things of this type, for a group or a community or anything, sometimes using words that take things to a point that can't be easily defined or criteria established for it starts creating difficulty in attaining goals because you don't know what the goal is. So I think there's some language that could probably be assisted by some change in item A to make Cambria Community Services. I'm not sure how we make it. We could ensure that the Community Services District is a district built on mutual respect and trust, and I don't think we have to say that we're trying to make it better. So my suggestion for item A would be to ensure the Cambria Community Services District is built on mutual respect and trust. I think that makes it a declarative statement and less open to trying to figure out what better means. On the second item, to promote and maintain high standards, not the highest. I don't know what the highest standards are. To maintain high standards of personal and professional conduct among all involved, district government, district staff, volunteers, members of the district board. That second sentence, I think, actually needs to be part of the preamble down in the next section in item B, and we can address that when we get to it. But those would be my suggested changes as far as the 1030.2.
Director Howell.
I'm not too clear on the last change. You're referring to the second sentence in paragraph B, is that?
Right, the one that says all elected and appointed officials, officers, employees, members of advisory committees, and volunteers of the district herein called officials for the purposes of this policy. And I don't know if that's a goal of the Code of Ethics. I think that's a preamble describing in some ways how people are referred to or groups or, yeah, I think it's just a placement issue.
So where would we put it, at the very beginning?
I would, my suggestion would be actually that in item B of 1030.3, that it start there saying all elected and appointed officials, officers, employees, members of advisory committees, and volunteers of the district, and actually come on a little bit from item B and pick up after district government that says, are expected to subscribe to this code, understand how it applies.
Can I interject here?
Yeah. That's what I said. There's quite a bit.
What this paragraph is saying is that we're adopting a code of ethics for a group of other people.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with that.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you should do that. In fact, I'm not going to vote for this at all because I don't think you can legislate ethics.
Okay.
And that's what we're trying to do here. I think guiding principles that we will establish as part of our strategic goals and stuff, I think, are fine. Guiding us in the right direction with good principles and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We take ethics training every year. I am fully in, you know, compliance with the ethics that are talked about in here, but I don't think this is necessary. I think it's trying to legislate behavior, and I don't think you can do that. So I'll be voting against this in any case.
I agree with you, and I think that's probably why I've got so many changes on this page, because I was eliminating language that was doing that.
So thank you. So, Director Pearson, since you will be voting no on this, do you have another alternative as to how to approach this item?
I think the guiding principles that we will establish
as part of the strategic
plan,
right.
I think will be more than sufficient for that. I think it will address the same things. We'll have lots of input from lots of people that are going to be affected instead of just the four
mm-hmm.
of us. And I think that's a much better way to tackle this.
I agree.
All right, so Director Howe, did you wish to make any remark here?
Well, I'm in an odd position here. As chairman of the policy committee, the committee did ask to have this brought forth, and I think originally the board apparently did consider it at one point. I think I need to not weigh in on this one and just let the committee stand on its own. So I think that I see both sides in this. And however it's addressed, it needs to be addressed. And I think the issue is where where is the writing going to be that does this? And so if that's really all we're arguing about at this point, it seems to me it's quite reasonable that it could as easily be dealt with in another way. It doesn't have to be in a policy manual. Although, I think it might be, and maybe this is something to think about as once we've done this, I think it might be well to include something,
come back.
A general statement as the results of our this planning,
mm-hmm.
some general statement, not as specific as what we have here, but just a general statement that can sort of provide a guideline where we can call it. Policy can be very, very high level. It doesn't have to be down in the weeds, as it were. I could speak either way on this one, and out of respect for the committee, I would urge you to go ahead and adopt this, but I understand completely the reservations that you might have. So.
I agree it's something that you could certainly come back to after we've gone through and established some of those guiding principles, and if for some reason there is something that sits outside of that and still needs to be addressed in terms of an ethics policy, then it can be discussed at that time. But actually, I much prefer taking the approach with the guiding principles.
All right, we have a request to speak on this item from, I believe, a member of the policy committee, Claudia Harmon.
I understand that I'm not supposed to say that I'm on the policy committee. That's going to maybe the new rule. But since you mentioned it, Harry, I will not deny that. I'm speaking as an individual, actually. I'm Claudia Harmon. I guess I'm just kind of jumping into my seat because, you know, when you're talking about ethics and then you're trying to say, well, we should be highest, not high and not highest, and you're wordsmithing it. I just think that if you want to elevate the impression of the CCSD to the public, why not? Why not be held to the highest ethics? Why not? I wasn't expected to speak, but I'm kind of horrified because, the policy committee, did write this 1030 based on something that the state has already created. This is something that we didn't make up out of the blue. And Mr. Pearson said that, you'd go and you read through your ethics every year. Well, why not uphold the ethics that you've been taught? So anyway, I personally think you should just go ahead and approve 1030 as it is, and if you want to change it around later in wordsmith it maybe at that time. But the policy committee has put a lot of work into this and thought about it, and I think that I think in good faith you should approve it. Thanks.
Thank you. I guess. As far as I'm concerned, since it does say here, highest standards of professional conduct, that's probably that something should be applicable in our lives every moment that we're breathing to the best of our ability. Just want to throw that in.
I guess I'm just trying to understand what's the difference between high ethics and highest ethics.
EST.
Exactly.
Yes, Director Howell.
On that one, I think it intensifies it, yes. But perhaps this board could make a formal response to the policy committee, I'll let somebody else craft it, but something to the effect of thanking them for their work and saying that we are considering it and after review, we would like to postpone, et cetera. We don't send something back to them once this group has decided, but can we ask the president or somebody to write a little note to them?
I think that's entirely appropriate, and I understand the effort that they've put into it, and I think probably what created some of the change in direction or process with this had to do with the fact that the whole discussion about the strategic planning and the mission and the goal and the objectives and all of those kinds of things evolved after the last time we had spoken to the committee. And so this didn't happen because we didn't consider it previously and just are rejecting out of hand what they did. It's just that it's been overcome by another process that the board is elected to pursue first.
All right, thank you. So I, for right now, we'll kind of, table this item for future discussion, including, let's say, when we do our town hall meetings and get input from the community as well. But Director Pearson.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
Well, it was your suggestion, man. I'm just piggybacking on you. Thank you. All right, so moving forward to item 5F, and I see by the clock on the wall behind me that we're coming up to the 5 o'clock hour. This shouldn't take so long, but do I hear a motion to continue till 5:15? At least, considering we have closed session, do I hear a motion to continue to 5:30?
I'll make that motion.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Madrid, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Stidell?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you. Agenda item 5F, Mr. Weigel, could you introduce this item, please?
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda 5F is discussion and consideration of approval of Resources and Infrastructure Committee's proposed mission statement, objectives, and goals. The Resources Infrastructure R&I Committee recommends that the board discuss and consider approval of their proposed mission statement, goals, and objectives, which are attached to this item.
All right, I'll open this for board discussion. Anyone wish to make any comments? Director Pearson.
This all took place before I took over, but I basically am fine with the document as written, and I recommend approval.
Excuse me. I see someone waving from the audience. Did you submit a? Considering all the other slips I have up here, and you, since you've commented, I think on every other item, Ms. Heinrichs, it wouldn't surprise me you did turn in a slip. So go right ahead. Thank you.
Okay. I support the board in adopting the Resources and Infrastructure Committee's mission statement, objectives, and goals. I ask the board also to direct the R&I Committee to review its request for qualifications, request for proposal to be used in collecting data for the Urban Water Management Plan and permit application for the Coastal Development Permit for the Emergency Water Supply Project. I use that title despite the board's agreement to use the name Sustainable Water Project. Paavo Ogren, your strategic and organizational advisor for the EWS, recommended that it be called the Emergency Water Supply Project, and several directors agreed, saying there is nothing sustainable about it. So although you have agreed to call it sustainable, I shall continue calling it emergency.
Maybe I misunderstand here, but is this pertinent to this particular item?
It's about the Resources and Infrastructure Committee.
Okay, but I don't...
Well, there's a problem with what's come out of the committee regarding that. And the Coastal Commission's senior environmental scientist has informed the board and the staff that the RFQ RFP, as written, will not satisfy the Coastal Commission.
Christine, I don't feel like what you're saying, even if those of us up here on the board are in agreement with what you're saying, that it's not, we're just discussing, you know, the mission statement, goals, and objectives of the R&I committee.
Okay. I'll be done.
Well, I see heads shaking up here. I mean, I'm more than willing to let you continue, but it doesn't appear that people sitting on either side of me are too keen on this. So,
I'll...
Well, at your will. I feel that it is pertinent to the Resources and Infrastructure Committee, but if you don't feel it is, then I'm done. Thank you.
Let me, if I could just state this. I believe probably in the future there'll be ample opportunity to make this statement. I would recommend that you make this at public comment at next week's meeting, and because you have points to make. That's just my personal opinion. Is that adequate?
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you. So the one thing I would want to comment on, General Manager Weigold, when Mr. Nugent and Mr. Webb first produced the mission statement, goals, and objectives. They were the ad hoc committee that did that. You found some, let's say, objections, not necessarily objections, but you were concerned about the way some of the statements were made. So how do you feel now with regard to the new and improved mission statement, goals, and objectives? Are you comfortable with this?
Yes, Mr. President. I think this is a solid list.
Thank you. Director Pierce, excuse me, Director Howell.
I think in view of the fact that both the committee chairman and the general manager approve of these of this mission statement and goals, I move that this board accept these for the Resources and Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Just one comment. There's in the objectives on the whole public meetings, provide public access to the tours. Are they actually doing that, or is that a support function? I would think that the staff is actually providing the access. They maintain the lists and establish the dates.
Yeah, the committee basically just wants to continue those tours and stuff. I think it's just kind of a goal that we're doing, and we're working with the staff on getting some dates and that kind of
right,
thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Before we go to taking a vote on this, I just want to thank I just wish to thank Mr. Jim Webb and Mr. Paul Nugent for the hard work on this item. They spent probably close to 4 months putting this document together. And I also want to thank everyone that's on the R&I committee, because they've got a lot on their plate, and they're addressing every issue in a very competent fashion. Having said that, Ms. Madrid, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Do we have need a second?
Oh, we need a second.
Sure, I'll provide the second.
Oh, okay. Pardon me.
Director Hell?
Aye.
Director Stidell?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. We now move on to future agenda items. Do anyone have any comment there? I'd like to make a couple of comments with regard to future agenda items. First, that we make an agenda item for next week's meeting on the 22nd, if that's possible, to discuss and determine the appropriate email retention policy for the district, since that's been a cause of concern recently. It'd be nice if we could get that out there for the board and the community to discuss and make a policy on. And also, and this may sound a little bit unusual, but perhaps we might consider, considering how many people we had at the beginning of this meeting and the less than handful of people that are at the meeting right now, we might consider putting, and of course this could be incorporated into public comment, but we might consider putting future agenda item at the beginning of the meeting as well as the end of the meeting. Because someone might come up with an idea at a future agenda item that we could might even incorporate in the meeting, and then something might come up during the meeting as well for a future agenda item. So I'd like to put that on as a future agenda item, if nobody minds.
Good idea.
All right. So,
Mr. President,
having done that, we're going to...
Mr. President,
oh, yes.
One issue on the email retention policy. We're not going to be prepared to present next week. We're publishing tomorrow.
Okay.
And so it just won't be a meaningful report if we have to put something together.
All right. So my apologies on that. So we'll do it sometime in February.
Well, can I?
If that's okay. Yes,
that
Director Howell.
Again, I think we know the staff is going to has been working on this subject, but again, I think this could be referred to the policy committee for further work before we see it, and it would be appropriate. We're having a meeting on the 30th, so if you wanted to formally refer it to us now, I can go ahead and appoint people to start working with the staff or myself in terms of working on it and perhaps having something that we can bring back to you in the first meeting in February.
Well, that's why we have all these wiser heads prevail.
I wonder if we shouldn't see what we've got first before we
some next
send
next
it
week
down for revision.
Why don't we
it may
that?
Be fine, whatever we have.
So. Well, you got a point. Yeah. Mm.
So let's get it in front of us and see, and if we think it needs revision, we'll certainly give it to the policy.
Bounce it back.
Okay, so we will discuss this item sometime in February. So having seen, having discussed everything on the agenda here, let me just say this much, that this meeting is closed. And now we will adjourn to closed session. And do we have any public comment on the closed session item? Seeing none, thank you for everybody that was here. Thank you to the directors and staff. We now adjourn to closed session.
And that's agenda item 7.
Oh, agenda item 7. Thank you, legal counsel.